He served at the Pentagon as an Army JAG. He graduated from Notre Dame and has two law degrees from Boston University and Georgetown University. He's been practicing law for over 30 years. He's your family's personal attorney. It's time for the David Carrier Show.
Hello and welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. This is the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. If you have a question, comment, or concern about wills, trusts, probate, if you're wondering how do I get the stuff to the kids without, without the bad guys getting it, if you're wondering about the long-term care, if you're wondering how do we pay for the high cost of long-term care, which setting is appropriate? Should it be a nursing home, assisted living, independent living? What's going on with that stuff? If you're looking to buy or sell a home or start, stop, or keep spinning a business, now's the time to call 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843, and we'll get your question on the air. We've got Betty. Betty, I understand you have Betsy. What's up?
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. Oh, I listened to your show once in a great while, and I thought I'd give you a quick call.
Super.
I take care of my brother, who is a disabled Vietnam veteran, Army.
Okay.
And we've been working with the VA somewhat. And so last week, a field examiner comes to the house and drops off some papers. And they want to know Bob's his income and bank statements,
sure,
and all that, and tax returns, and et cetera. Do you think I should have my lawyer look at all the what's going on?
It doesn't hurt.
No,
it doesn't hurt because here's the thing. Assuming that your brother's receiving benefits under the improved disability pension.
He's getting the small amount of about $500 a month.
Okay.
Yeah, and I know he was when he was here. He was got to know Bob a little, and he said to the fact that he deserves more money. And also, there's information they want to know on all the expenses of the house.
Sure.
And I have my money, and Bob's has his.
Mm-hmm.
And we combine it, the expenses.
Yeah, but you don't commingle the funds, do you? You don't put them together in the same bank account.
Yes.
You do?
Yeah, they're all under stock dividends. That's what we live on, our dividends. It's in an account. And my expenses, well, Bob's expenses, well, monthly medical is about, it used to be about $1,000.
Yeah, but you see, here's the thing. I don't know if there's, I'm guessing from what the examiner told you, I'm guessing that your brother's got a service-connected disability, or at least...
Yes, Agent Orange.
Okay. And
yeah.
So what he's saying, what the field examiner is saying is, you need to apply for a higher. He's not 100% disabled, I'm guessing.
No, not really. No.
No. So what
he'll never work.
Right. Well, what they're doing, just guessing on what you're telling me, is see there's two programs available. There's the improved disability pension.
Okay.
Where if you serve during wartime,
yes.
And you're homebound, yes. Or you know, you need help with the activities of daily life.
That's
I mean,
right.
There's different levels,
yes.
Okay? There's three different levels.
Yeah.
There's if you're over 65,
yeah.
If you're homebound, or if you need help getting around, aid in attendance is what they call it, right?
Okay.
So depending on which level, then you're entitled to a certain level of improved disability pension,
uh-huh.
Okay? And that's independent of whether or not you were injured or anything like that. Any service connection. Okay, that's one. But then there's the other program, which is service-connected disability. So if you can, uh-huh. And that's what you're talking about, because you're talking about the Agent Orange.
Yes.
All right? Now, what they have to do is they have to say, okay, what are Bob's needs?
Yeah.
Okay? And that's why they need to know how much the house costs and all the rest of this. Now, a lot of these programs are financially based, okay? So the idea of you mixing your monies together, I understand that that's a lot easier, and there's probably benefits to doing that, but I couldn't recommend it, because when you mix the assets together, they don't know who's is who, you know, who's who and what's what.
I think Bob has more than I do in the money situation, you know?
Yeah, but if they're together in the same account, who knows? You see, that's why you got to main. You can have them at the same institution. There's no problem. But Betsy's money should say Betsy on it, and Bob's money should say Bob on it. And never the twain shall meet, except for when it comes to splitting up the expenses, so that when they come out and they say, well, you know, what are Bob's expenses?
Yeah.
It's kind of tough to tell because they're all mushed in together.
Well, how am I going to do that?
Well, going forward,
huh?
I say going forward,
yes.
the way you're going to do it is you set up a separate account, one for you, you know, new accounts,
okay.
One for you and one for Bob.
Okay.
And then you direct deposit whatever money you have coming in gets directed. See, because here's the concern I have is that let's say Bob gets into a car wreck, okay?
Yeah.
Now we come after the account with both of your names on it. And
I see.
I'm going to guess if it's done the way it usually is, all right, then they'll be able to get all the money in that account, not just his.
Really?
Yeah, and if you have it in, and here's the worst part about it. If what you're getting is Social Security and what he's getting is Social Security and or the VA, right?
Yeah.
Even if he gets in the car wreck, if your money is pure Social Security money and his is pure Social Security plus VA money, they can't get it anyway.
Yeah.
See, there's a way to set this up so that you're completely protected, but it doesn't sound like you've done that.
No. And I know I mentioned he's going to come in a couple weeks to – I have to run out with these papers to the bank to have them fill out some information. Then I'm going to take those papers – and he's going to come back, see?
Right.
And I did say, how about if I have a lawyer come to the house and get to know you? He says, well, I don't want to do that because we want everything to go smoothly. That's what he said.
Now, when you say a field, was he a VA?
Yeah. Uh-huh. He was
not a VSO, but a VA.
VA, I think, or field representative, examiner.
See, if he was he from the fiduciary office?
I don't know.
Did he talk about fiduciary at all?
No.
Did he talk to your brother?
No.
He just talked to you?
Yeah, he did. Well, yeah, he was here at the table with him.
Okay.
Talking, yeah, he himself is a medic, army medic.
Here's the thing. All right, look. Here's the thing. Whenever someone tells you, yeah, and I'm at sixes and sevens on this thing because lots of times, you know, attorneys have a well-deserved reputation for putting a wrench in the gears, right?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Okay. But at the same time, lots of people lose lots of money. Because some flimflammer came to the door saying, hey, I'm a field representative, whatever.
He had a badge.
Oh, yeah, well, I can buy a badge, too.
Yeah.
When a representative of the government advises you not to talk to a lawyer, that's the time to run to the lawyer.
Oh, okay.
Okay, because, you know, and we see this in the time and time again where people... we're entitled to more benefits or different benefits or to hang on to more of their assets, all kinds of stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And it's only and if you listen to what they said, you wouldn't get the benefits. Okay, now this guy's coming to the door and he's saying, hey, I can get you more benefits. Well, maybe he's a representative of the VA going door to door trying to, you know, qualify people for – I haven't heard of that before.
Well, I did get a letter in the mail.
Okay.
Okay.
From
and
who?
It looked official, you know.
Well.
I suppose you could say that about a counterfeiter, too. But
well, you know. But, you know, see, it's not unusual for them to come out, right?
Yeah.
To double check.
That's
and
right.
You know, and what you're telling me, up until the point of they're saying, well, don't get counsel because we want this to go smoothly, it's like the job of the counsel, of the attorney, is to make sure it does go smoothly.
That's right.
Right? I mean, and if he's the guy at the VA, he's, you know, the attorney's not going to be the one putting up roadblocks. I mean, it's not the attorneys who have a million case backlog.
Yeah,
that's the VA.
I was thinking, too, that I might even ask the VA, and I've worked with them a little, but it is very, very hard.
Right.
I would like to get reimbursed for taking care of my brother, you know?
Well,
I live with my brother. I take care of my brother,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I feel I should get some money every week.
Yeah, but it's not gonna be retroactive anyway. All I'm saying is, parts of your story hang together, sort of make sense.
Okay.
Parts of it don't.
Really?
It won't. Well, yeah. I mean, look. Call my office. We'll give you the poaching the veterans pension. It's a free report put out by the Federal Trade Commission. I didn't even write the darn thing about how the scammers and flimflammers are taking advantage of people on the guise of, oh, I was a vet, or, you know, we'll get you more benefits and stuff like that. I'm not saying that it couldn't be legitimate. It might be. But if it isn't, you need to know that, too. You've been listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Welcome back to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. We were just talking to Betsy, who's taking care of her brother Bob, who's a disabled Vietnam vet. She called 888-463-2843. you can, too. And was visited by somebody calling themselves a field representative of the VA. And there was a letter to the house, looked official, and then she answered that, and then the guy came out. This could all be, you know, on the straight and narrow. This could all be be legit. On the other hand, there's no question that the veterans pension and some of those other VA programs. See, the problem is there is huge frustration, huge with the VA programs. There's like a million case backlog. Now they're being and who knows where the truth of it is, but now they're being told that the in order to cut down the backlog, they're dealing with the easy cases first, so it looks like the overall number is coming down, right? Or what they're doing, and we've seen this before, is they're just denying. Just, okay, we're going to deny everything and then, you know, let God sort it out kind of thing, and then appeal if you want to. So what's happening is they're dealing with the backlog in many cases by simply denying the cases, and guess what happens? Now the appeal backlog is skyrocketing. It's a tough situation, and what it does is it creates an opening for the scammers. It creates an opening, the frustration and the all the rest. The idea, look, I might have, you know, $500 or $1,000 a month out there, but it's almost impossible to deal with this bureaucracy. Opens the door, you know, for the leather bag men, you know, for the guys with the briefcases, the guys with the carrying a briefcase and not wearing any shoes. You know, that's the problem. That's a problem. Get a copy of the free, you know, let me say in the ads, you know, you can get a copy of that free FTC report. We'll mail it right out to you. Just give us, you can get it online. You can go to the government and get it. But if you want to, you can call this number, 888-463-2843, 888-463-2843. Get over to the website. Just ask for a copy of the report. I'm more than happy to shoot you a hard copy, as they say. We've got Jim on the line. Good morning, Jim. Welcome to the David Carrier Show.
Hey, good morning, David.
How can I help?
Last week I caught just a part of your show, and you were talking about these ladybird deeds.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you, as I understood it, had a client that had a Medicaid claim refused by the state because that they were using that ladybird deed, and they said that you couldn't use the house in that way, that the house had to be considered asset.
Right, right. I mean, we had gotten an approval. Just to recap the facts of the situation, using the ladybird deed is a very, I would say, routine tool when we are applying for the Medicaid. We've got a homestead. I don't want the homestead to go through probate, but I can't have the homestead in the trust and qualify for Medicaid at the same time. You see, if I put the bricks and the sticks in the trust, now it's not going to the person's not going to qualify because that house isn't homestead anymore. Now it's treated as if it was cash. Okay, so what we do is these transfer on death deeds, and the purpose of the transfer on death deed is to put the house into the trust or to the heirs, which we don't recommend, but to transfer it basically on the death of the individual. So that's the function of the Lady Bird deed. And what happened, and this used it hundreds of times, and in this case we get the approval. And then it got denied, and we've just got the paperwork on the denial, so we're filing the appeal now. Because using these deeds is specifically allowed by the current rules. Now, the scuttlebutt is that come January, they're going to change the rules, okay, so that Lady Bird deeds will not be allowed, that they'll be, you know, specifically prohibited. And that's the concern. You know, that's the concern I was raising, because the effect of that is going to be to say, okay, you can't avoid probate with a trust, and now you can't avoid probate with the Lady Bird deed. What does that mean? That means we're going to be funneling everything through probate. Guess what happens in probate? Estate recovery happens in probate. Are you with me on that? So that's the concern. Is that a fair recap there, Jim?
Like I said, I didn't get all of what you were saying. I turned you on, and you were just about wrapping it up.
Oh, okay.
You made a comment about that you had a client that was refused.
Right.
And the state said the reason they were refusing it was because that you used the Lady Bird deed, and they weren't going to allow that, that the house had to go through probate. And I thought, well, that sucks because that's got the Lady Bird deed.
Right, right. I couldn't agree with you more.
And I'm saying, you know, she paid this guy all this money, excuse me, his lawyer all this money, you know, to get all this set up. Now the state comes along and says, oh, well, you know, you can't use it anymore. And I was calling you to make sure I understood you correctly because I didn't hear the whole conversation, the whole, you know, line of questioning that was going on that.
Right, but that is right now we're at the point of, are you serious?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? What? Because it's right there in the but I got to tell you this, Jim. I got to tell you this. We do a fair amount of Medicaid applications in the office, okay? And there's been, I don't want to call it a trend exactly, but it sure looks like one, where we're getting a lot of denials we don't usually get any denials, and now we're starting to get some denials based on kooky stuff. Like having a car or a boat and asking us questions that you're not allowed to ask, and this is just one more of that genre where we have a caseworker who's not really sure what's going on. It seems like a good idea to them. They sort of kind of heard about this or something. I'd hate to say that it's policy until we see that it's policy. But the suggestion, like I say, and it's just scuttlebutt at this time. It's not, you know, we don't have any official word on it, and we're going to be taking the interim appeal, you know, the first appeal to the supervisor, saying, hey, guy, you know, how about read the reg and let my people go? You know, I mean,
yeah.
But you don't know.
Yeah.
You know, and reliance on the Lady Bird. See, here's the problem, Jim. So did you do an estate plan that relied on the Lady Bird deed? Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes.
Here's the problem with the Lady Bird deed. And it's not, I did not foresee that Lady Bird deeds would somehow be classified as divestment. That is a complete baseball bat to the back of the head in my world, okay? I had no idea that was coming. But I will tell you that most every other state puts a lien on your homestead when you apply for the Medicaid. Okay? So that was the threat on the horizon that we're looking for, is that Michigan is going to go the way that there's the sound. When we get back from the news, we'll kind of recap this very important development. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. You found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. So give us a call, why don't you? 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. Get your question, comment, or concern on the air. You can also drop me an email, david@davidcarrierlaw.com. And if you go to davidcarrierlaw.com, then you'll see when the upcoming Life Plan workshops are upcoming. And you can sign up, too, if you want to. We've got Jim on the line. Jim had a question about the ladybird deeds that we were talking about last weekend. Let me just give you sort of a real short recap. A ladybird deed is a deed that effectively transfers the property, the real estate, at death. Not until death. Not a current transfer. It's a transfer at death. And they've become pretty popular as a way to retain control of the property now and still avoid probate. Especially popular, they've been around forever, but they've become recent years more popular, because if you have your house in a trust, if you're trying to avoid probate by putting your house in trust, if you need the long-term care, meaning Medicaid, it's almost a one-to-one, then the house counts like it was cash. Now, there's some circumstances where that's a very good thing, but generally people don't like it, and so you do the ladybird deed, which says, okay, I'm going to put my house into the trust when I die. I'm going to do the deed now, but I'm going to avoid probate because it's going into the trust or to my kids, which, again, I don't recommend that, but anyway, that happens at death. Okay. So my concern is that we submitted a Medicaid application, we used the ladybird deed, and now they're saying that the ladybird deed was divestment, meaning when we did the ladybird deed, we were giving the house away. Which doesn't make any sense because the regulations, the Department of Human Services own regulations say that it's not a transfer. Okay, so how the heck did we get this? How the heck did that happen? Right? I mean, why? And so we're working through that process. We're appealing it, but the word is that these ladybird deeds are going to be held to be a divestment going forward. Are we all together on that, Jim?
Yeah, so far, yeah.
Okay. And then you did an estate plan, I guess, that involves ladybird deeds, right?
Yeah, I did, yes.
Yeah. See, here's the thing. There are two threats, two ways that you've got, that the state can come after your house, put it that way. You know, it used to be, and I mean 3 years ago, it used to be you just didn't have to worry. It didn't matter what you did or didn't do. The home was protected. Okay, now they started getting serious about estate recovery. But right now in Michigan, estate recovery is simply a probate process. If you stay out of probate, you stay away from estate recovery. Now, if you have your house in trust, which is a very popular way to avoid probate, it counts like it was cash for Medicaid purposes. In other words, now they can come after it. Okay, because it's cash. So what people will do is they'll take their house out of the trust. Now what? Well, now it's got to go through probate unless you do the ladybird deed. So people have been doing the ladybird deed to avoid probate on the other side. We could have used the trust. That tool doesn't work. Now we've got to go through probate. Oops, but we've got the ladybird deed. It looks like they're trying to shut that off as a way to avoid probate. Now, the problem with the ladybird deed has always been, I wasn't worried about them taking away the ladybird deed. I didn't think they would do that. What I figured was that Michigan was going to do what almost every other state does, and that is when you apply for the Medicaid, they put I call them Medicaid mortgages, they put a lien on your house, okay? Now, the ladybird deed doesn't help you there because if Michigan gets to the point where we're doing, and listen, we were hours away from it at the end of the last legislative session. They had worked up the bill. It was ready to pass. For whatever political reasons, I don't know, they didn't pass it. It didn't become law. But they've done all the committee work on it. They've done all the work to do the Medicaid mortgages. So the ladybird deed doesn't help you there. I mean, it helps you, you know, in the here and now, in you know, this moment in time, the ladybird deed's a solution. Okay, but if you just look down the road a mile or two, you can see that they're going to be putting liens on the house, and the ladybird deed doesn't help you there.
Yep.
there's another technique that we've been using for, you know, since 07 now, to avoid that also. And what I was always concerned about were these Medicaid mortgages. I had, you know, in my darkest nightmare, I wasn't thinking that they were going to turn the Lady Bird deed into a divestment. I just figured, well, I don't want to rely on a Lady Bird deed, you know, for advanced planning. Now, for crisis planning, you do what you can. You row with the oars that you've got. But when you're planning ahead, you know, we're going down a slippery road. You're not going to put the chains on the car? Come on. You know, I mean, you got to, maybe it won't happen. But if it does, you need to be ready for it. And what I'm talking about are these Medicaid liens, these Medicaid mortgages, which every other state, except Pennsylvania, I believe, already have or are already implementing them. So, okay. So let's, and the Lady Bird deed doesn't help you there. We don't have it in Michigan yet.
Okay.
All right? So that's why I, you know, if you're planning ahead, relying on the Lady Bird deed is really not, well, it's not what I did anyway. And now we've got this other thing, which is, okay, forget about the liens, right? We're going to shovel you through probate anyway. So it's a, you know, it's a tough deal.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Okay.
So, but that is what I was talking about. Now, we don't have a permanent rule on this. Okay, they haven't changed the rules yet, right, on the Lady Bird deeds. But believe me, I'll keep you posted, because it's
yeah. I gotta see. There's a lot of people that probably maybe didn't hear you last week or hearing this now are saying, "What?"
Right.
Yeah,
right.
What? I'm screwed, you know.
Well, you know, I took a big chunk of the show last week because, yeah, it's nothing that I expected them. I figured the Lady Bird deed was nothing to rely on because it doesn't help you if they do the Medicaid mortgages. Okay,
yeah.
If the legislature acts and says we're putting the liens on, the Lady Bird deed is a weak read. It's not going to help you. But I never figured that they would say the Lady Bird deed itself is a divestment. And we'll see. Maybe, you know, maybe that scuttlebutt is incorrect. You know, sometimes the rumor is worse than the news. We'll find out.
Yeah. But, well, is there an out for this? I mean, is there something that people can do to keep the state from taking half of what they've got, for crying out? Because most people, their home is the biggest investment they got.
Well, and it's not half. It's not, you know, and that's the other thing. You used to think we could keep half of the value. You used to, like, in Kent County, you could keep about $50,000 if it went through. No,
Yeah.
Down to zero. You know, that's gone by the board too. So, it's a colder world out there right now than it was a year ago, even 6 months ago, in terms of what they're in the whole estate recovery thing. You can't blow it off. You gotta, you know. Be very serious about it. So, yeah, it's like I say, I'll keep you posted. But it's one of those things where, when you do well, and Jim, I'll just tell you, it's one of the things we handle in the Life Plan Workshop. You know, in 2 hours, we don't have enough time to get deep into every topic that relates to this stuff. But the way that people usually use Lady Bird deeds, usually use trust, that is one of the things that we do talk about. So, you know, and how it all interacts with probate and all the rest. So, you know, it doesn't cost.
Yeah, it's free.
Yeah, it's free. I mean, come on down, you know.
Yeah.
Serious.
Okay.
Yeah, it's an eye-opener, I think.
You're starting to break up on me. I'm getting away from you a little bit, but I appreciate everything that you said and just the clarifications. And if you can keep everybody updated on this thing on your show, I think a lot of people are going to appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate the feedback.
Okay, buddy.
Thanks. Take care. You're listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, and I've got 1 minute. Can I get an email in 1 minute? That's my challenge right now. Okay, here we go. My husband just bought us a house, married as sole. He's the only borrower to the loan. If he dies, will I be responsible? What do I need to do to make sure I can keep the home when he dies, continue making payments, or if I decide I can't afford power right to sell? We're in California. Well, the answer is that even though your husband is the one on the mortgage, they can't foreclose just because he died. If you keep making the payments, you'll be okay. How do you get the power to sell? Well, if he quick claim deeds it to you, the remainder interest to you, then you can sell it. But when you sell it, then the mortgage has got to be paid off. How about that? 30 seconds or less. You're listening to the David Casey, good or what? Listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. Thanks for dialing us up, and you can call us up if you'd like at 888-463-2843. That's 888-463-2843. If you'd like to sign up for one of our free life plan workshops. Now, we just did the one in Holland. That was a lot of fun. Also coming to Muskegon. And what is it with you folks up in Big Rapids, huh? We haven't had to get a bigger room yet. It's filling up. It's filling up. But in both Holland and Muskegon, we had to get a bigger room. So come on, guys. A little overachieving there, if you don't mind, up there in Big Rapids. Come on. We got extra cookies. It's not going to be a problem. But if you'd like to, and of course we do them every week, and sometimes twice a week down here in good old GR at our very own facility where we don't have to worry about them losing the resume. For those of you who missed out on the first hour, we had a remote, it was the one in Holland, I'll just say it. It was the one in Holland, and somehow or other the reservation got lost in the sauce, who knows. You know, we've got our copies of our signed contracts and everything else, but when the advance team showed up, the ship had sailed. Now, I'm sorry, we got homecoming, a wedding, and three other things going on. So, sorry. But, you know, the crack squad, you know, that crack team of, they improvised the solution. How do you say that? Improvisators? Improvisate? I don't know. Anyway, they dug deep and got a solution. And I think everyone had a pretty good time at the life plan. Where hopefully the other places won't lose us in the computer. But if so, that's all right. We can roll with those punches. But anyway, if you'd like to come to one of them, they're a lot of fun. We are going to be in Muskegon and in Big Rapids in the coming weeks. And looking to get Battle Creek and Kalamazoo on the schedule as well. Those are a few months out. So if you're listening down there and you would like us to, or somewhere else, you know, and you think, hey, that drives a little bit too far, can you come over here? Well, we're more than happy to, you know, more than happy to come on out. Just drop me an email, david@davidcarrierlaw.com, with a suggestion for a time and a place, and we will take it, as the judge says, you know, we will take it under advisement. And we generally act on those pretty quickly. Let's get to we've got a few minutes left here. Let's see if we can get some more of our emails. This is a good one. What happens when the grantor's name is incorrect in a deed? The grantor was a bank as trustee for an investment trust. The name of the beneficiary for whom the bank was supposedly acting is wrong. Is the deed void or voidable? Well, you know, at that point, if the bank is correct, you know, you got to, whenever people give us an email like this, you really need to see the deed. You know, because the name being wrong could be everything from they misspelled it. You know, my name's David Carrier, right? But I've gotten things to David Carter. Well, you know, not that big a problem. You know what I mean? It's a typo, and you know, you can work your way around that. But if instead of, you know, intending to send it to me, David Carrier, and they send it to, well, if they send it to Jim Cramer, it's like, well, wait, wait a second. Yeah, they're both bald, but, you know, that's different. Those are different guys, you know, completely different. So if you have the right trustee, but you have the wrong beneficiary, or the wrong name of the trust, there might be a title issue problem there, but it could be the sort of thing that's easily remedied with an name affidavit or that kind of thing. Unlikely that it would be void. In other words, unlikely that the thing would just be, hey, we can't do anything with this deed. More likely that if somebody objected to it, right, then they could say, well, it wasn't a valid transfer because the name is incorrect and I relied on the incorrect name, and so you need to set aside the deed. That could happen. Not very likely, but, you know, you'd have to develop the facts, but it could it could happen. Here's a good one. Do beneficiaries have use of the family auto owned by a revocable trust after the last grantor dies? So we put the car, you know, we put the family auto, whatever, I don't know what family auto means. Anyway, it's mom and dad's car. Mom and dad have both died, and they titled it to the trust. Do the beneficiaries of the trust have use of the vehicle? Well, the short answer is, it says, four equal beneficiaries. One is the trustee. Insurance on the auto is current, or does that terminate on the transfer to the trust? Well, when they transferred the vehicle to the trust, mom and dad did, they should have updated the insurance at that point. So let's assume they do. Does using the auto put the trust at risk for lawsuits, as the trustee stated? Well, sure it does. You know, if any, and see, here's the thing. When you have assets in the trust, okay, and you have beneficiaries of the trust, the trustee is the person who is first, last, and in all cases responsible for those assets, okay? It's not like, oh, I'm a trustee of the trust, so I get to drive it on 2 days of the week, and you get 2 days of the week, and it doesn't work that way. That is not how it works. The trustee is the one who has responsibility. Now, if the trustee wants to rent out the car or lease the vehicle to one of the kids, okay. If the trustee needs to use the vehicle in pursuit of trust business, okay. If the trustee wants to sell the vehicle and now distribute the proceeds, okay. And the other three beneficiaries have nothing to say about it because they are beneficiaries of whatever comes out of the black box we call the trust. And the automobile is just one of those items in the black box, in the treasure chest, whatever you want to say. The trustee is the one who is responsible for managing those assets. One of the most common reasons for us to go to court, other than probate court, is evicting family members from trust property. You know, we've got somebody who's been living with mom and dad, and they don't feel like moving out now that it's time to sell the vehicle, sell the house or move on. They don't want to move on. Well, they have no right to stay there. Just because they're the beneficiary doesn't give them any right to use the vehicle, to use the house, to use the assets. No. Mm-mm. And so suing kids to get them out of the house, unfortunately, is something we do, I'd say, several times a year. So the beneficiary, do they have use of the family auto owned by the revocable trust after the last grantor dies? The short answer is no. The longer answer is no, of course not, which stems from the nature of the trust. And if somebody is using the vehicle, does it put the trust assets at risk? The answer is yes. Because if someone gets a car accident with their trust and now they come back against the trust, right, the trustee who using it in the trust business, right, now those other assets can be held to answer for the liability created by the thing. This is a question that comes up time and again, and we've only got a little bit of time, but the Medicaid and Medicare both pay fees for hospice care simultaneously. Spouse and hospice care billing records show that Medicaid paid to hospice care and Medicare also paid hospice, okay, when they're both being paid. Does this sound correct, or do you suppose there's some manipulations of the system on the hospice care bookkeeping to receive dual payments? Well, probably not. Usually, when you look at those bills, what it is the person's on hospice, they're in a residential care facility, and the Medicaid is paying the residential care. Hospice is providing other services that they bill Medicare for. And that's generally how those work. You've been listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier. Looking forward to seeing you at one of our free life plan workshops.
You've been listening to The David Carrier Show, a lively discussion addressing your questions and concerns, but not legal advice. There is a big difference. So when making decisions that affect your family, your property, or yourself, the best advice is to seek good advice, specific to your unique needs. If you missed any of today's show or would like additional information about the law offices of David Carrier, please visit davidcarrierlaw.com.